a translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living entities are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. Purport. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are part and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called Maya. Ma means not, and Ya means this. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. In the Brahma Samhita, it is clearly stated that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Even the millions of incarnations are only his different expansions. Similarly, the living entities are also expansions of Krishna. The Mayavadi philosophers wrongly think that Krishna loses his own separate existence in his many expansions. This thought is material in nature. We have experienced in the material world that a thing, when fragmentally distributed, loses its original identity. But the Mayavadi philosophers fail to understand that absolute means that 1 plus 1 is equal to 1, and that 1 minus 1 is also equal to 1. This is the case in the absolute world. So there's a spiritual mathematics lesson. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna. Although we are separated parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless not different from him. The bodily difference of the living entities is Maya, or not actual fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By Maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. The living entities, as separate parts and parcels of the Supreme, have a purpose to fulfill. Having forgotten that purpose since time immemorial, they are situated in different bodies as men, animals, demigods, etc. Such bodily differences arise from forgetfulness of the transcendental service of the Lord. But when one is engaged in transcendental service through Krishna consciousness, one becomes at once liberated from this illusion. One can acquire such pure knowledge only from the bona fide spiritual master, and thereby avoid the delusion that the living entity is equal to Krishna. Perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter for all living entities. And giving up such shelter, the living entities are deluded by the material energy, imagining themselves to have a separate identity. Thus, under a different standards of material identity, they become forgetful of Krishna. When, however, such deluded living entities become situated in Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that they are on the path of liberation, as confirmed in the Bhagavatam, Muktir Hityanartha Rupam Svarupena Vyavastiti. Liberation means to be situated one's constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Om Gyanati Marandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksun Mitamina Tasma Sri Gurve Namaha Panchakalpa Tarubhishcha Kripa Sindhu Devicha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this verse in purport, Srila Prabhupada is talking about illusion. The Sanskrit word maya is roughly translated as illusion. The Prabhupada points out that ma means na, ya means this. So this maya means not this, or that which is not. Obviously something which is not true, is not reality. So thus, our conception of this material world is considered to be maya, or that which is not actually true. So this entire world, all living entities are caught up in this illusion, or Maya. And what is that illusion? Well, we can say that illusion is thinking that we are something which we are not, that we are thinking that we are wholly and solely these material bodies or this material mind. And of course, we are not. We are the soul. We may be thinking that we have a separate existence other than being connected with the Supreme. And that is, of course, another type of illusion that has been spoken about in this purport. So, thinking that we are separate from God, that we are not connected with God, is the root cause of illusion, or the lack of knowledge that we suffer from in this material world. So, when we are thinking that one's existence is not connected to that which is transcendental, or that which is beyond matter, that is the beginning of our ignorance. That is the beginning of the illusion that covers every living entity in this material world. And as we shall see, it is really the cause of the suffering of the living entities. So, I've entitled this class, Perfect Knowledge in an Imperfect World. And of course, Srila Prabhupada has talked about what perfect knowledge is and how we can understand this perfect knowledge which is given in the Bhagavad Gita. So why is this world imperfect? Well, this world is imperfect for many reasons. One, because it's a place of suffering. We see that everybody who enters into this material world experiences some degree of happiness and some degree of distress. That is inevitable. That is the nature of this world. Sometimes people will say, but I'm happy. I'm happy most of the time, and even if there's some things that aren't perfect, that's okay. That only lets me enjoy the good times more, because I have some contrast between happiness and distress or sorrow. But the fact is, we can never escape the fundamental facts of life, which according to our Vedic scriptures are birth, death, disease, and old age. Every one of us is born into this world. We will suffer different illnesses, different distresses, the adibhautic, adidaivic, adiatmic miseries, distresses from the self, the body and the mind, distresses from other living entities, and distress from natural causes. Those are going to be there. Eventually, we get old, we get diseased, and eventually die. And no matter what we do in this life, whatever plans we make, no matter how good we think that we have a situation all figured out, eventually it comes to an end. So those things are there in the material world. It's the nature. This causes us distress. Why? Because it is not our nature. Our nature as the soul is to be eternal, is to be full of knowledge, and to be full of happiness, Satchit Ananda. That's the natural constitutional position of the living entity. So when in the material world we experience something quite different, when we experience ignorance, temporary, short life, and when we experience that we are not happy, we are suffering, this is contrary to our nature, and therefore we are suffering. So what Srila Prabhupada is telling us in this purport is we need to trace back the root cause of why we are suffering. And what we learn is that we are suffering because of our forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. Because we have forgotten our connection with God, therefore, so many other sufferings and miseries take place. So I was thinking a little bit in preparation for this class, what is the actual result of our illusion that we are separate from Krishna? How does this actually manifest? Sometimes we say, you know, it's easy to say, oh, we're suffering because we've forgotten God. Well, how? How does this actually come about? Well, first of all, if there is no higher spiritual principle, if there is not an absolute truth, if there is not a God, then first of all ethics and morals becomes relative. There's no absolutes. If there is no absolute standard to judge by, then one's idea is as good as another. So we have so many different competing philosophies, capitalism versus communism, so many different things that are out there, and no one can really say that one is superior to another, one is better than another if one thinks that there's actually no absolute. We're sort of making it up as we go along in this material world. In fact, it's very popular now. Often it's described that this sort of late capitalistic philosophy that we have really absorbed, especially in the Western countries, is a philosophy called postmodernism. Postmodernism is one of those fancy philosophical terms, which really means that there aren't any absolutes. Whatever you believe is as good as what I believe. And it comes from the idea of modernism was the idea from after the Age of Enlightenment that there was a purpose of life, that human society was evolving better and better. We were becoming more and more knowledgeable. Our purpose in life was becoming more and more known and manifest as we progressed. Well, so the postmodernists don't believe that. They say, no, there isn't any real purpose. Things aren't getting any better. But maybe they're not getting any worse anyway. We really don't know. Whatever you think is all right. Whatever your philosophy is, fine. Let's all just kind of get along and do the best we can. Well, that may sound a little bit compelling if one has no other higher philosophy. One has no other purpose. Because if there are no absolutes, then there is no check upon the exploitation of one human being and another, exploiting animals, exploiting the earth. All of these things can come about. Well, because after all, you may have some philosophy about ecology and living in harmony with nature. That's great, but I have a philosophy that everybody should get as much as they can out of life. So since they're all equal, I'll just go ahead and do what I want to do, and I'll go ahead and drill oil and raise a lot of money through banking or whatever it may be. So we can see that because of these prevailing philosophies, which are at essence separation from our relationship with God, and believing that there is really no absolute, and there's no real morality or no real ethics, then basically that opens the door for anything and everything. And we can see the condition of the world as it's come to today. That things simply become more and more in this downward spiral. Also, if there isn't a spiritual reality, what is the reality? If I am not spiritual in nature, then I am simply this body and this mind, which is what? A combination of chemicals. If that's all life is, this combination of chemicals and molecules and interactions and physical interactions, then what is my purpose? What is actually meaningful in my life? There is no real purpose except for personal gratification. Just trying to enjoy as much as I can. Trying to get what I can out of this meager existence of a few short years. So thus we have these slogans like, used to be this commercial many years ago, it's probably not around so much, it said like, go for the gusto, or we only go around once, or all these sort of things, that people actually buy into this idea that there's no real deeper meaning in life. So try to get the most you can out of it. Try to enjoy life. Try to enjoy the good things of life the best you can, and don't think any more deeply about higher meanings. Well, what does this lead to? This leads to selfishness. This leads to everyone looking out for their own interests, not looking out for the interests of others. And therefore, we see great exploitation of one person over another. We see wars coming about because I want this piece of land and somebody else wants that piece of land. And we see the killing of animals, exploiting animals. We see abuse of different of children, of women, etc. All of these things will come about because there is no higher spiritual understanding. So sometimes people say, yes, but I'm a moral person. I may not be a religious person or a spiritual person, but I believe in being good to one another, trying to help humanity. Yes, sometimes these things are possible. In fact, about the highest philosophy one can come to without a spiritual understanding is something like utilitarianism of John Stuart Mill's, who said, let's at least try to do the greatest good for the greatest number of people. Try to somehow help one another, help humanity, and sort of lead the best life that we can. Well, that's certainly better than a mood of just exploiting. It's a little bit higher mode of nature, more mode in the mode of goodness. But ultimately, it's a very limited concept. If we're simply trying to just help one another or help humanity, even that is very, very limited. Because how much can we really help one another? We were talking about in the beginning how the real problems of life are birth, death, disease, and old age. So if I give some food to somebody who is homeless, or I help, you know, cure a disease that extends the life of a person another 5 years, have I really benefited them in the light of eternity? What will be their fate in their next life? That's the real question we should ask. If our desire is to be a humanitarian, or to help our fellow living entities, to try to do some good in the world, then we should think of what is actually the highest good. How can we give the highest benefit to all living entities? That highest benefit is giving something that goes beyond this lifetime. It's something that will benefit the soul, the living entity, for eternity. So that gift of God consciousness, of being able to help people to understand what is their spiritual nature and how can they end suffering altogether, not just for a few years. This is the real humanitarian work. This is the real work that needs to be done. But this work will not be taken up unless one has a clear understanding of spiritual life. If one understands that he is spiritual in nature and has a direct connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the knowledge and the understanding that is going to inspire people to truly give the highest gift to others in this material world. So all of these things are working on a collective and a social basis, but even on an individual basis. If we do not have an understanding of God, if we do not have an understanding of our spiritual connection with God, then there is great personal unhappiness. We can see in so many ways that our material advancement in life has not led to happiness. America is, we always used to say it's the richest country in the world. I'm not sure if we are anymore, but we're up there at least. Fairly wealthy amongst the developed countries. But yet, everyone is complaining about economic downturns, oil spills, housing market crashing, everything going badly for people, people being unemployed. So people are not particularly happy. And even when things are better times, when the economy is a little bit rosier, people are still experiencing so much personal unhappiness, so much personal distress and stress. I was looking at some statistics from the National Institute of Mental Health, our governmental agency that monitors mental health issues. And it was really, of course, my background is psychology, so I'm familiar with these things, but I was actually a little surprised at some of the actual numbers. You know, when they're counting, you know, 10% of people suffer from depression and 19% from anxiety disorders and from this and from that and you know, different personality disorders. It turned out that their total statistics were about 48% of the population suffer one major mental disorder in their lifetime. And in any given year, you pick out 1 year at random, 26% of the population is suffering from some type of mental distress or mental disorder, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, et cetera, personality disorders. That's rather amazing, isn't it? You would think that Americans should be fairly happy. But in reality, there is no suffering greater than mental suffering or emotional suffering, is there? You know, it's very devastating, very, very difficult for people. So it's not something that we think, oh, this happens to a few people. Has happened to 25%, one quarter of our population is suffering these types of things. This is very symptomatic of Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, this is what happens. That even though there may be some material, we may not be suffering so much from starvation or plagues or things like this, this mental anxiety and distress and stress is prevalent. I was also looking there and saying, what are the most prescribed drugs in America? Now, the top 27 of them were for depression, schizophrenia, anxiety disorders. So everyone is suffering from these disorders. taking medication to try to combat them, but not really finding real solutions. You know, so very, very unhappy. So much anxiety and stress, you know, that our whole population is suffering from. So what does all this mean? Is a good field for psychologists? Yeah. But actually it means that we cannot be happy if we are not connected with Krishna. If we are not situated in our constitutional position, it's called our Sanatana Dharma. Our Sanatana Dharma is our eternal, inherent constitutional position. It's our nature. The inherent, we talk about Dharma as being an inherent feature or characteristic of something. Just like the inherent features of fire are heat and light. So in other words, you couldn't have fire without heat and light. Those are part of the definition, inherent features of fire. So what about us, the jiva, the atma, the spirit soul? What is our constitutional position, our inherent features that are there eternally with us? Our inherent features is that we are meant, as I said, to be eternal, to be happy, and to be knowledgeable. But it is within a certain context. It is within the context that our inherent nature is to be servant of God, to be part and parcel of Krishna, and to be his eternal servitors. So if we are not in that position, no matter what else we have, we're not going to be happy. There's this play they used to put on all the time called the Fish Out of Water. Some of you have probably seen this. They used to put this on where they take the fish out of water and they dress them all up and give him so many things and so much nice food. But he's dying because his nature is to be in water. The fish has to be in water. In the same way, the spirit soul, the living entity, has to be in relationship with Krishna. Our nature is to serve. It's not very popular always when we say that. People say, I don't want to be servant. That's like a lowly position. I want to be master. I want to be in control. That's our sickness. That's our illusion, this material world. That we want to be master, we want to be in control. There's actually one controller. Ishvara Paramakrishna, Satchinanda Vigraha, Nadir Adir Govinda, Sarva Karana Karanam. Prabhupada mentioned this verse of the Brahma Samhita in his purport. The Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes, the supreme controller. We come into this material world because we want to be God, but actually the position is already taken, so it doesn't work very well. It's a futile effort. But we are thinking that somehow or another, I want to be separate from Krishna. I want to be the enjoyer. I want to be the controller. But in the spiritual world, there's only one controller. There is one supreme, and that's God. That's Krishna. Therefore, Krishna makes this material world. He says, all right, if you insist, you can come to this material world and you can try that. You can try to live separately. You can be in this illusion of nescience, avidya, in the material world, thinking that you are in control, that we are separate from God, and we get this world which has a little bit of happiness and a lot of suffering, a lot of distress, a lot of anxiety, and birth, death, disease, and old age. But the hope is that we can become happy. Through the spiritual knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, these scriptures, the Vedic literatures, explain to us what our real position is. They explain to us why we are suffering, why we are experiencing the distress of this material world, and how to become relieved of that distress. And it's actually fairly simple. Prabhupada says in this purport, perfect knowledge is that the Supreme Soul, Krishna, is the supreme shelter of all living entities. So we simply need to take shelter of Krishna. Surrender to Krishna, serve Krishna, chant Krishna's name, take Krishna's prasadam. In so many ways, dedicate our lives through devotional service, bhakti yoga, and then it becomes a very simple process, a very joyful process, a very happy process. Because we are rightly situated in our eternal position as servant of Krishna. So then the living entity can become happy. because we're situated in that Sanatana Dharma. So first we need to understand the spiritual knowledge that's given to us in Bhagavad Gita. How can we accept this Bhagavad Gita? Because this is revealed knowledge. Krishna is revealing this knowledge to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Of course, all the revealed scriptures that are here in the world come from that source. Krishna, out of his kindness, reveals himself through his words. Sometimes he speaks directly, as in the Bhagavad Gita, he speaks to Arjuna. And sometimes, such as in the Srimad Bhagavatam, his devotees speak about him out of their realization, their experience, and their revelation of God. So this knowledge is passed on by the great devotees, the pure devotees of Krishna, the saints and sages and spiritual masters who come into this material world. And so then Bhagavad Gita is handed down from one spiritual master to another in a specific succession. And from that unbroken specific succession, from Krishna to Lord Brahma, down through Lord Chaitanya, through the whole chain of spiritual masters, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and then to our spiritual master, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has given us the same knowledge in this Bhagavad Gita as it is. And it's interesting that Prabhupada deliberately titled his translation commentaries Bhagavad Gita as it is. It might seem like an odd title for a book, Bhagavad Gita as it is. But Prabhupada wanted to emphasize that this Bhagavad Gita was not changed in any way. That it is the same knowledge that's passed down in a 5,000-year disciplic succession. And it's devoid of concoction or mental speculation or maybe Krishna's this, maybe Krishna's that. It's interesting that at one time Srila Prabhupada said there have been so many translations of Bhagavad Gita, and it was asked, why do we need another one? Why did he need to write another translation of Bhagavad Gita? And Prabhupada said, there have been so many translations of Bhagavad Gita, but how many devotees of Krishna have come from reading those? I had that experience myself. I read a Bhagavad Gita before I encountered Srila Prabhupada, and I didn't even understand much of it. I didn't know what to make of it. I thought it was kind of interesting. It's kind of far out, you know, read some holy book from India. But I didn't know what it meant. Then when I read Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, it all became clear. Because Srila Prabhupada, in his purports, is giving the knowledge unbroken as it is. This knowledge that is handed down from Krishna to Lord Brahma 5,000 and thousands of years later to us. So this is the process of spiritual knowledge. It is through receiving spiritual knowledge through the pure devotee, the pure spiritual master who does not, and what is the quality or the symptom of a pure devotee? You can say so many things, he may have so many different qualities, but what Prabhupada emphasized, he said that I did not change this philosophy. So the spiritual master gives the same philosophy without concocting, without adding his, you know, here's my own little interpretation or spin on it, anything like that, but brings it down purely. And thus we have this pure knowledge coming from Lord Krishna. And that knowledge has the capability of enlightening the heart, of opening the heart, so that we can really understand once again, what is our spiritual position? What is my purpose of life? What am I meant to be doing in this world? So we simply have to read these books, try to understand this philosophy, and then take up the process of devotional service, of bhakti yoga. And of course, that process begins with the chanting of Hare Krishna, the chanting of the holy name, as we're all so fortunate to be able to come together here on Sundays like this and be able to chant the holy name together. That is the Sankirtan Jagya, the spiritual practice for this age of Kali. So, even though we're here in 95 degrees here in Alachua, we don't mind so much because we are very fortunate to be able to be together in association of wonderful people, wonderful devotees, chanting the holy names of the Lord, being able to hear this wonderful philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, explains to us how we can overcome the suffering and distress of this material world and take up a real spiritual position. So I'll end there. If there are any questions anybody might have? Gaudi Prabhu. Is there a microphone?
Thank you, Tamahaprabhu. Hare Krishna. Speaking about Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita and his presentation as it is, there was one story where Srila Prabhupada, one Indian man was saying, I recite Bhagavad Gita every day. Every day without fail, I recite Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said, that's all right, but have you acted in the instructions of Bhagavad Gita for even 1 minute? So, there's a difference between the ritualistic performance of recitation of these Vedic mantras, and then there's another expectation that Srila Prabhupada was expecting us to act on these things. So I just wanted to throw that in since you brought out that point.
Yes, that's a very good point. Bhakti yoga means active service, that we engage our body, our mind, our words, our whole life in the service of the Lord. So we know in Bhakti Yoga there are 9 processes of devotional service. It begins with hearing, chanting, and remembering Krishna. So reading these literatures, chanting the holy names, remembering Krishna is the beginning, but also serving the lotus feet, deity worship, offering prayers, doing service throughout the day. All of these things are spiritual processes that connect us with Krishna. It's not simply an intellectual exercise, but it's a devotional practice. Thank you. Anything else? Questions, comments, anything? Yes?
Hey, welcome. I want to ask you if you can explain a little bit about why surrendering and why taking a role of a servant is important, and like why the pure devotees of Krishna, they're not distressed, they're not affected by happiness and distress, and just explain a little bit more.
So the question is, why is a pure devotee not affected by happiness and distress? And what was the first question about being a servant?
How is it beneficial? Why is it important to surrender and take a role as a servant?
Yeah. Well, as we said, being a servant is actually our constitutional position. You think about it, everybody's a servant. Everybody is serving somebody. Everyone's serving their family. Everyone's serving an employer. Or sometimes people may be serving their society or their country or their community. Or they may be just serving themselves or their senses. So we can't avoid being a servant. So the question is, who are we going to serve? And so we want to find the best person to serve. And if you actually check out all the personalities in the universe, the best personality to serve is God. Right? If we're going to serve somebody, why not serve the highest? Why not serve the best? So Krishna is the all-attractive feature of God. Krishna means all-attractive. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality. So as we serve God, the interesting thing about service is that it's reciprocal. It's based upon love. In the material world, we may serve someone and they may appreciate or may not. Right? They may reciprocate or they may not reciprocate. But in the spiritual world, in spiritual service, Krishna always reciprocates. So it's a very wonderful experience. We're not the loser. When we serve Krishna, he actually gives us so much more than we do. Krishna owns the entire universe, and all he asks us is give a little leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water. So we give a little bit of service, Krishna gives us all of his love. So it's a very, very wonderful experience. And it's because of that, that one who is fully engaged in service does not experience the suffering of the material world. Because one who is fully understanding spiritual life is not on the bodily conception. So even though there might be some pain or there might be suffering to the body, it's not understood, it's not experienced in the same way if one is highly advanced in devotional life. Srila Prabhupada gave us the best example in the last days of his life. He was obviously under extreme pain. His body was wasting away to practically nothing. But yet, he seemed to be showing like no signs of pain or difficulty. In fact, he was only interested in the welfare of others. He was translating the Srimad Bhagavatam up to the last day of his life. So he did not experience the suffering of the material world in the way that we would or ordinary people might. Now, so it's not that there isn't suffering. It's the nature of the material world. But one who is very advanced in Krishna consciousness understands Krishna's plan behind it, understands how whatever happens to them is the will of the Lord. It is there somehow or another for their good, you know, or there's some lesson there, and simply understands that whatever happens, I simply engage in my service, and then Krishna gives a certain protection to that devotee. Just like we saw with Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad was, you know, his father was trying to kill him in so many ways. He simply chanted Hare Krishna, and Krishna protected him in every moment. It's not that he even asked to be protected, but Krishna's protection was there. So we can understand that no matter what pains we may have to experience in this material world, you know, through the mercy of Krishna, it's somehow or another, it is for our good. We try to see the will of God, the will of the Lord behind everything, and we accept. Yeah, this is Krishna's arrangement. And therefore, it's not experienced in the same way. If one is very advanced, if one is very surrendered, you know, then one is able to somewhat transcend the material body. Yeah. It's a complicated topic, and I can't say that I'm terribly realized in it, but try to understand the best we can. Yeah. Yes, Pancharana Prabhu?
Receiving knowledge from a spiritual master. And I initially was thinking, what is this receiving of knowledge? Because is it just hearing it, reading it? Because at least I know in my own case, I've heard, I've read, and yet still I don't see very often how I'm connected to Krishna at all. In every sense. So I was thinking that the receiving of knowledge from a spiritual master means submissive reception with service. That the knowledge that the spiritual master can give us is only actually received when it is heard in surrender and submission and in service. So as we, therefore it is, we come together to hear again and again and again, so that as we hear repeatedly, our mood of submissive hearing and submissive reception increases, and we actually begin to receive the knowledge from the spiritual master in a full sense.
Yes.
And it begins to reveal the truth.
Of course, we did text 35 today, and just for a little change of pace, the more famous verse is the one right before it, of course, text 434, Tadvidi Pranipatena, which is just try to learn the truth by approaching his spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because they've seen the truth, which is exactly what Pancharana Prabhu was saying. Then this mood of submissive inquiry and service, that it's in that mood that we approach the spiritual master. Because of pleasing the spiritual master, then he imparts the knowledge to us. So, thank you. Very good point. Yeah. Okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.